Donald in the kitchen talks about food. Donald in the kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. The center of Iowa, the center of the United States, the center of it all. Well, we're starting out a brand new year this year, and I would like to start out with a poem, why not? I have a poem actually called January 3rd today, and it is by Ted Kooser from his book Winter Morning Walks. And since we had a touch of really cold weather recently, we can kind of all relate to this. This poem is called January 3rd. 2 below 0 at 5 a.m. All through the night, the deeply troubled, sighing furnace has tried to console one whimpering floorboard that wants to return to its tree. Beyond the walls, milky, translucent snow, brushed into drifts by the long blue fingers of shadow. The snow has gathered as much of the light as it can from the stars, but that's not enough warmth to kindle the eyes of even one rabbit, frozen still as a stone in the corner of morning. Brr, it's still January. Yes, it is. A poem by Ted Kooser. Well, today we're going to be talking about good resolutions for a healthy new year.
New Year's resolutions. Hello. Everybody's probably thinking about it. The newspapers all have all of these ridiculous suggestions going on about the whole thing. So what are you doing, Lana?
Well, see, I was just talking to Mike here, our engineer, saying about resolutions. I'm old enough that I realize I'm not going to get too specific about your resolutions. I just kind of tend to lean toward the things that is like, be more kind, adapt to situations.
Right. Be That's more an flexible. Open-ended one, isn't
I, no,
it?
No, no, I like that because, you know, losing 20 pounds by Valentine's Day, forget that. No. I don't know. I don't like setting myself up for failure, and I don't think we should. However, there are some things to think about, especially coming off of the holiday season where I did consume my share of Christmas cookies. I did. Mm-hmm. So we've got things like that to talk about. One thing I do regret, I did not drink enough eggnog. I realized it got to be the day after New Year's, and I thought, well, I think I've only had one little glass of eggnog. What in the world is wrong with me? So I guess I'm going to just have to
keep making eggnog, right?
That's something I will. But, like I said, I did a lot of Christmas cookies. So what do you have to say about New Year's resolutions, Donna?
Yeah. Okay, I'm afraid the same thing happened. So I go through the Christmas season. You know, of course, I've made a lot of fudge and sweets and so many invitations and parties and lovely, lovely things. And all the while I'm thinking, oh boy, this is I have to admit, I love sugar. It's my weakness in life. And, sweet things, I guess I just can't get enough sweet, you know? So the whole time I was thinking, okay, come January, I'm gonna cut off the sugar.
All right. That,
right. Well, we're in January now.
I'm telling you,
putting on the brakes is not easy.
We always hear that sugar is bad. There's all different kinds of sugar, of course, but sugar is pretty hard to avoid in our culture.
Well, there's the question of too much sugar.
All right.
Now, where the hell do you draw that line?
I must admit,
I have... Some things now taste too sweet to me. You know, it's like salt. You can reduce your taste buds craving for the amount of it. Like, you know, I don't like too salty, and I don't like I will not buy milk chocolate. I will buy dark chocolate. Okay. That's less sugar. And I think that helps, but sugar is, apparently not good for you.
But I thought sugar was one of those things that, you know, out in the hunter-gatherer days, we needed that sort of energy. We probably needed...
Well, we didn't have sugar then.
Oh, we didn't then, I don't suppose.
No, only what was in fruit or honey.
Oh, okay.
Or, I mean, you know, something like that. We had a lot less sugars in our diet, and certainly no refined sugar.
Aha,
so,
refined sugar.
Right, we were not built to eat large amounts of sugar. Apparently, our nutritional, our digestive abilities don't quite evolve as fast as the culture. You know, we're still in our hunter-gatherer bodies, and we're eating modern processed food. So my New Year's resolution is at least to reduce sugar. Down to special occasions, right?
Like the holidays.
Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of holidays.
But so we realize that sugar is actually can be an extreme problem for some folks. And it's hard. It's hard because so much, it is definitely a drug. Our bodies respond to, oh, I want more of
that.
Yeah,
the glucose
levels. Hence sugar is in.
Pop you out right up.
A lot of stuff.
Well, and I tend to like to take gifts of foods to my friends. Mm-hmm. And the normal thing is something sweet. Like, Lana's a great baker, so she does cookies and cakes and, and I'm afraid I do the same thing. So it's, I got to change some. That's a habit I'm trying to modulate a little bit.
Actually, we can do that. Now, you notice over the past year, we've done things like, now this maybe wouldn't hit everybody's trigger for a gift, but Donna and I occasionally exchange things like, romantic things like bone broth, you know?
Exactly.
Or soup and, you know.
Healthy, hearty things, you know.
It's okay to give that sort of thing too. And that's all right. It's all right.
Well, another thing that's on a lot of people's lists after the holidays, of course, is what's it called? There's a name, like Sober January or something like that. There's some catchy name where people abstain from alcohol for a month because they've had too much champagne on Christmas or New Year's Day or something.
Nothing sharpens the mind like
right.
Day after New Year's
Eve. So people give up alcohol or... less of, I would like to say, is maybe a good thing. Another big thing on everybody's list this year. Oh, well, we can talk about mocktails.
Okay.
I mean, that's something I do like. I'm not a big drinker, so it's not an issue for me, but I do like, to take some fizzy water and mix in. We mentioned a new product. What's it? Burlap and barrel cardamom tincture. So it's cardamom flavor, but it's an alcohol based, sort of like vanilla extract. But let me tell you that if you take a fizzy water and you knock a couple shakes of that into it, and then maybe you want to put a little lemon or something, you come up with a really tasty evening beverage drink that's quite healthy.
Very good.
So mocktails are nice.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, that's a good way to for January or whenever. Now the other big bugaboo that everybody's talking about is processed food and especially processed meats, bacon, hot dogs. Apparently, now this will be this is a fictitious number, but this is kind of what the headlines read like. Well, if you don't eat bacon and hot dogs, you will live 30 years longer. It's apparently quite important to reduce those kinds of cured and processed meats. Now, of course, they're yummy, but if you eat them only in tiny little amounts on that charcuterie board at the party that you go to once a month or something, you know,
not bacon for breakfast every day. Is processed means like they sort of cooked it, right?
Well, generally for meats, processed meats mean, something that's been smoked. Uh-huh. Smoke is apparently carcinogenic, which all of you heavy grillers better pay attention to that. Don't burn the food as much. I know it tastes good, but, you know, these are things that we just need to do less of. And of course, all processed foods. So there's this saying in the grocery store, what's around the periphery, which would be the meat and the vegetables and the cheeses, those are the not processed foods. Whereas the things in the middle of the grocery store, cereal, for example, is a highly processed grain.
Except meat. Meat isn't in the... I mean, you put the bacon is kind of with the meat.
Yeah, you skip the bacon part of the meat case, right? Okay. This is tough to navigate, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, actually, you can kind of read the labels on bacon and things, and they put some interesting things in there, like nitrates, and I don't know why, but...
because it's a preserved food.
Yeah, okay.
Let me say, to be gentle on oneself, I like to think of it in terms of less, you know, reduce, not cut it out completely. After all, bacon is certainly a mainstay of Iowa society here, you know, but maybe if you're going to have a cheeseburger, maybe get the one without the bacon.
Yeah.
There's enough stuff on a regular cheeseburger. I mean, we got options. Too many options.
Also, there are humanely raised and I don't know if it's considered organically raised, but at least there are some bacon. I know I pick up one that says, what does it say? It says no preservatives, no icky bits in here.
So there's some tricks in processing meats. One of them is to say that you don't use, there's a curing salt that is a nitrate, I believe. And that is used routinely in almost all of those preserved meats, salamis and bacons and et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to get the all-natural label, you then use celery salt, which is a naturally derived version of basically the same thing.
Oh.
So it's, you know, some people say it's absolutely no different than the regular curing salt. Other people think it is. So I am not an expert on that. I have heard people who know what they're talking about argue both ways. So hard to say. The main thing would be to just not eat as much of the stuff.
Do that.
Yeah,
you can do
right.
That. Besides, so, there's a lot of things to eat out there.
So here's the thing that I would say has been on people's lists for many years is to drink less coffee.
Okay.
Well, here's some good news from the New York Times. If you have, this is a rather strange statistic, but I'm quoting them. If you have 1.5 to 3.5 cups of coffee per day, you are, ready for this, 30%, during the study period, people who drank 1.5 to 3.5 cups per day were 30% less likely to die during the study period.
Oh?
That
sounds good.
That's what the New York Times is saying that's okay.
And you okay? Was the study period a week or
I don't know? It didn't say.
Here we go.
You know, I have to say the New York Times is not my go-to for nutrition usually, but you know that's what I read. So you know, there's probably some truth to it.
That's true. You hear, well, coffee comes and goes in favor and. And caffeine is definitely a part of coffee. And yes, they try to decaffeinate things. Caffeine is actually,
so caffeine is okay this year.
Well, it must be. they want us to get some things done, I betcha.
Oh, that's true. We're going to need it to get through this year. I actually have this New York Times article pulled up, and it's ridiculous a little bit. Okay, the headline was 9 Nutrition Tips for the New Year.
Oh,
the simple
good.
And surprising advice will help you have a healthy 2023. Okay, number 1, chia seeds deserve a place in your diet. Okay, experts say chia seeds have earned their hype. They're packed with fiber and rich in antioxidants. You know, there was this. And it's kind of fun if you ever do it. You just take chia seeds and you make a chocolate pudding out of it by adding, what is it? I don't know. You could just put chocolate milk in it, for goodness sake. But because they, you know, they when they soak it up, which takes, I don't know, maybe an hour or two in the fridge, it turns into glump, right?
Yeah, glump.
And it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite pudding. I have done it. I don't mind it. And I don't do it regularly. So
no, I don't like, I use chia seeds. I do not, I do not put them, make pudding out of them, because if I'm going to make pudding, I'm going to make pudding.
Exactly.
But I sprinkle them on my cereal in the morning. I put them in hot cereal.
What a good girl you are.
Now, that's okay. I kind of like, I don't know, is it supposed to help digestion or something?
I think so. It says.
But you don't put in much.
Lots of fiber, right? Fiber and antioxidants.
Yeah, that's easy to eat that way. And sometimes, maybe the heat kills them, but sometimes I put them in things that I'm baking too. But always I put them in something in the morning. Chia seeds are kind of, they remind me of poppy seeds, but they get, as you say, glumpier.
They get, mucilaginous, is the word, or something like that. Anyway, they're kind of funny.
We can all use some more mucilage there, folks.
Well, but, I had to laugh when I saw that the New York Times put this on their number one. It's like they're trying to get Americans to eat more chia seeds. It just struck me as funny. Their number two was, this is ridiculous one. You don't need to throw out all the berries, duh. A single mold-coated strawberry might look gross, but unless the other berries in the box have visible signs of spores, you can keep them in the fridge. Genius, huh?
Move on to number three.
Okay, the number three was the thing about the coffee. Okay. That one I thought was worthy. Then natural wine may not actually be better for you is number four. I have nothing to say about that. It doesn't make any, foods help to hydrate you. It says you don't need to rely solely on water to reach for melons, strawberries. I mean, this is not genius stuff here. Okay, now they say limit the amount of processed meat you eat. Okay, we agree with this one. It says the occasional hot dog won't wreck your health, but processed meats have been reduced to cancer, type 2 diabetes, and heart disease. Plant-based alternatives are a safer bet, but they're not all equal. Oh, boy, you can say that again. That would take a whole article. I'm not recommending the plant-based meat alternatives, okay? Number seven, okay, we agree with this one. Make whole grains a staple. You're not eating enough of them. That's absolutely true. We eat, American idea of a grain is some white rice. That hardly counts, you know.
Yeah, actually, I just read someplace that Americans' idea of a grain is Uncle Ben's rice.
Oh, yeah, even better than
instant
stuff.
The kind that's been kind of like beaten into submission.
Reconstituted, yeah, right.
Okay.
We don't disagree with that. Number eight, swap your afternoon tea for matcha. That would be okay.
Okay.
The bright green tea is ubiquitous in, more antioxidants and plenty of caffeine. Okay.
Okay. Matcha is a kind of tea.
It's kind of a certain grade of green tea that's been ground into a powder.
Ah.
And there are grades of matcha on top of it.
Of course.
From the really expensive to the kind you can put in an ice cream to make it green or something, you know. So, and then their ninth one is steer clear of sticky snacks. Dried fruit, candy, gummies. These can lodge in your teeth and the spaces between them. Ta, 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 ta. Sugar-free gum? I don't think so.
Or pick your teeth after you eat your gummy bear.
Well, yeah, brush your teeth. Whatever. We can do better than the New York Times.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah, on this one, I have to say, because, we've already gone through the less of.
Wait a minute. Let's go back to grains.
Oh, okay.
We have a news item from the Donna Kitchen News Department.
Yeah, this was kind of
take it away.
Okay, another source of general food information would be the UN. I'm assuming it. Oh, yeah, it's the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization has declared. Ta-da! 2023 is the International Year of Millets, in the plural, right? And they are, because they are praising the grain's ability to grow in arid soil with minimal inputs. That fits right into our climate change anxieties. They talk about, I happen to like millet. I don't think this is a bad idea at all. It's one of those things. we could promote along with the chia seeds, for goodness sake, you know.
Well, another one of those things, I don't think most people could identify a millet if it hit them in the, between the eyes. So it's, you think, okay, bird seed.
Yes. Huh? That's yes, it. That's probably the most contact people have with
round, yeah, tiny.
A little bit looks like quinoa if you're used to using, also looks a little bit like mustard seeds, kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to cook. It poofs right up. And it has, let's see, nutrition-wise, a 45-gram serving of millet has about 5 grams of protein, 4 grams of fiber, more fiber. Fiber is good. It's on our to-do list, right? And it's a good source of nutrients such as magnesium, phosphorus, thiamine, niacin, B6, and folate. Some finger millets, or a variety of millet, have high levels of methionine, which is also an essential amino acid that is often lacking in starch-based diets. So, increasing millet's prevalence in global diets by 10% would result in strong co-benefits between the increased nutrient supply and the reduced environmental impact. Uh-huh. Okay. That's what they're saying. So,
well, also another thing about millet, and maybe why, well, actually, the UN kind of takes this into account. Millet can actually be grown in a lot of really arid places where, in the soil is not so great. I know it's grown in northwestern India for one thing, where, you know, this is a land of camels, and
it's a staple in certain parts of Africa in the diet, and as you said, in India, it's now being grown more in the U.S., kind of on the Western High Plains, where they have been experiencing drought. Mm-hmm. Part of that story was about a farmer in what state was it? Was it Montana or
Colorado?
Colorado, where she was growing millet, and at first all of her neighbors were laughing at her. But the last few years, you know, which have been pretty serious drought in some places in this country, they've kind of come around to see the wisdom of her folly, as it were.
Yeah.
So 2023, eat more millet.
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to be coming back to more resolutions and healthy habits here. But first, I want to take a little time to remind you that this is KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about good intentions.
New Year's resolutions. Yeah, we are resolved. Boy, oh boy, this year.
Well, it's always nice to take an overview look at some healthy habits because we can talk about it. And I guess the more we talk about it, the more we are likely to do it. We were talking about things we really should avoid. We know we should avoid and be a little more circumspect about things like sugar and alcohol and processed
things that we need
food.
To do less of.
Right. And here's some more less of. And this is kind of on a national and global scale. There's a thing called PFAS.
Oh, yeah. We did a whole show about these things because they turned up, of course, in one of the wells for our beloved city water supply here. Mm-hmm. so it was a bit of a kerfluffle. Plus, surprisingly enough, the is it the EPA that does this? I forget in which. Anyway, the government agency that regulates this stuff actually, lowered the standards, which means they are actually allowing, less of it is allowable. They've decided this is even more dangerous than we thought, which is an unusual move.
It must be
welcome move. Yeah. It must be really bad if they're doing this. Mm-hmm. There are things you can do. There are plenty of things you can't do. It's around us everywhere. But personally, you can find it in things that have flame retardants in it. Like, I have to say this is a pat on my back. But years ago when my children were little, there was a requirement in the U.S. that flame retardants be put in all children's pajamas.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, you didn't want the kid to catch fire in bed, for goodness sake. I don't know.
It's a noble thought.
It was considered a safety thing for children, and I thought, I don't think I want to do that. so at the time, I had to either go to the thrift store and buy older children's things, like my daughter who's now 50, I could still do that. All those Gerber baby things. The older ones were just plain cotton and didn't have that in it. And then by the time the second child came along, I actually had to buy imported, you know, like either French or Japanese baby clothes or something like that, because they didn't do that in those countries. And they were sold not as pajamas in this country, but as play sets or something, some euphemism, but you can watch for flame retardants in your clothing, in your, you know,
cookware.
Oh yes, right. Teflon is a big no-no. It's gone now pretty much. And all of the new non-stick, pots and pans don't have that in it. And it usually says on the packaging, which means if you're thrift shopping or garage sailing,
or I keep using my pans for tens of years, okay.
Yeah, the ones with, if you had Teflon, get rid of it. Okay. That's all I can say. And, sorry, but it'll probably end up in the landfill. It shouldn't be something that other people have to eat off of either. So the Environmental Working Group had a recent, they said they're calling it, it's no longer profitable to pollute. 3M, which is a big, you know, the Scotch tape company, 3M, is a big producer of flame retardants. So 3M claims they will stop PFAS production in 2025. So we're supposed to hold them accountable for this. Of course, there are more than 42,000 potential sources of PFAS contamination. 200 million Americans could have PFAS contaminated drinking water, and PFAS can be found in the blood of 99% of Americans today.
You know, this now they're kind of scaling back because whoops, maybe it's not so good.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other place they are a lot that you can control is a lot of those fast food containers, like the linings of pizza boxes, some of them. It makes a paper product grease proof. So a lot of the food wrappers of fairly large national chains have that in it. Now, hopefully they're being phased out, but you know, if you're a regular shopper of those kinds of products, you might start asking questions, you know, when you pick up your pizza or your burger, is this box lined with PFAS. And of course, they're going to say, I don't know. But if you hear that enough from customers, maybe something will change with that. So those are things that you can personally do. There are others too. Yes, like if you're buying a new couch, don't ask for the flame retardant or it's like the Scotch Guard. It's not just flame retardant. It's also
stuff that makes things like Teflon.
Well, yeah, it makes it if you if your dog throws up on the couch, it doesn't soak into the couch. Well, I guess there's a reason. Maybe the dog shouldn't be on the couch. Well, I don't know. Well, you know, instead of putting all these chemicals on to protect it, it's a problem.
Right. So these PFAS, you see it written all capital letters, are often called forever chemicals, which kind of tells you a little bit right there because they don't break down and kind of hang around. If you look this up, the names of them are very long and scary, but look for PFAS, PFAS, as something to not quite...
Less of those we want.
Yeah. Oh, also, Donna mentioned that PFAS were found in the local water supply here. Donna Lana Kitchen did a show last year. It was May 28th, as a matter of fact, talking to...
Pat Schlarbaum,
Pat
right?
Pat Schlarbaum, mm-hmm. local environmental concerned person, and the show was called What's in the Water? You can find out more by going to khoifm.org, and all our shows are archived there. You can look up that one, What's in the Water?
Well, not to be alarmist, but I think the upshot of the whole thing locally was that they took that well out of they kind of offlined it, so we're not pulling water out of that.
That's good. That's good.
That's a good step, you know.
That's great.
So
there's a lot of things we should avoid, but there's things we have to do when we're sustain ourselves. And we were talking about, you know, cold and flu weather here, and it's kind of cold and damp out, and sometimes you get the flu or cold. And
yeah, it looks like we're in some kind of mega flu season on top of circulating COVID.
So, Donna, what kind of things do you eat when you're not quite feeling up to snuff?
Oh, well, the things that I eat when I want to feel virtuous, well, when I'm sick,
okay.
soup, right? And garlic. Garlic is my, you know, what's that old saying? Garlic is better than 10 mothers or something. I eat raw garlic when I have some kind of influenza kind of thing. You know, I just chop the clove up and gulp it down like a bunch of pills or something like that. When I really want to feel healthy and virtuous, my favorite things are soup made with homemade broth or even just a cup of hot broth, chicken stock. I mean, I never throw away a chicken bone. If I'm cooking something that has chicken in it, I save the bones. Beef stock, venison stock. Around here, we get a lot of venison.
It is a favorite. I'm often kind of appalled when I think about hunters hunt things and people grow animals. How much of the animal is actually thrown away? Oh, we don't want that anymore. I've learned to cook down bones, thanks to Donna. So having broth in your freezer ready to go, it's a really good thing. Oh, also,
well, it's so nutritive because you know, a lot of the icky bits are basically collagen and minerals, and they break down into the broth, and it's very. There was some anthropological thing where I read that. In tribal society somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, the elders were always given the bone marrow because it is so nourishing.
That makes sense.
Concentrated, dense nourishment. So, you know, using those bones to make a broth, you know, not only is it good for you, it makes your soup taste completely... The difference between a white tablecloth restaurant, for example, and, you know, some... You know, Campbell's soup, for example, is that all really, really good restaurants start their soups with homemade stock. It just is a different kind of flavor. And you can make vegetable stock, or you can make fish stock, or you can any kind of stock where you're utilizing parts of food that you might otherwise throw away, because the stock is the water extraction method.
Yeah.
So you don't waste things so much.
Just get all the good parts out. And I agree with you about garlic, Donna. My friend Valerie gave me a cold remedy. And it's a little bit of a fuss, but when you're feeling pretty awful, this is what she suggested. Make a really warm tea out of lemons and garlic.
Mm.
It doesn't taste all that good, but your nose is stopped up. You can't tell. Anyway, you sip on that while...
Can you put honey in it?
You can if you'd like.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. Make it more palatable. Yeah.
But still, it's the steam. It's the garlic. Wrap yourself up in many blankets and put your feet in a tub of hot water, as in hot water, and this water has to be over your ankles. You can't just dabble your little tootsies in it. It just absolutely warms you up. You start steaming. You start, like, everything starts running in your body, and that's kind of my go-to for a really heavy-duty cold. It does help. It warms you up something fierce. And if I have just a little bit of an upset stomach, I don't know why, this is maybe from my childhood, if you're coming off of a flu and you can't eat anything, nothing feels good, my go-to is soda crackers and ginger ale.
That is an old one.
Well, it's just nibble on it a little bit, but it's kind of the first thing that kind of wakes you up after being feeling not so good.
When the tummy is funny. That reminds me of my mother's main remedy was what we used to call milk toast. You take a piece of white bread, toast it, butter it, and float it in a bowl of warm milk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what my mother always gave us when we were sick.
Huh. Oh, I remember graham crackers in milk.
Oh.
I don't remember warm milk? I don't remember. It was a bowl of, you crunched, well, it's kind of like cereal.
Yeah.
These little things that we do to, whether they work or not, they do make us feel better. Other things we can do, there's a more list of things to do here instead of just giving things up. Move your body more. Even in this weather, you can go out and walk. You can, I suggest dancing myself, but so just grab your dog or your cat and
move.
Dance around your kitchen. Put on some good music, listen to the radio, and move around.
And there's something about when the weather is, you look out the window and you go, oh, ugh. You know, there's no sun. It's kind of drippy out. But if you actually bundle up properly for the weather and get out into it, it's always lovely. Even when it's drippy. The only thing I have to say, I don't take my walks if it's really windy and cold. The wind is hard.
It's been sort of challenging.
Yeah, well, but, when it was below zero, I can usually walk down to about zero with a couple of layers on, as long as the wind isn't cutting through you. And in Iowa, we have lots of wind. But, like, today, what is it, 35 and kind of drippy rain? It's kind of pretty out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you're out in it, I have to admit, there's that resistance in getting out there, but... You have
the great pleasure of being able to walk down the street and come to the KHOI studio.
That's right. Uh-huh. I only live a block from the studio.
So it gets you out at least on once a week there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And here's another thing about awareness of things that we can be mindful of our habits for the New Year's. We can recognize stressors and find pleasure. Now, I know this is the Midwest, and pleasure is not really, we don't think about that much.
Well, we can call it gratitude.
Gratitude, yes.
That's a virtue.
Like I said, my resolutions aren't concrete things, but finding pleasure, finding gratitude, changing our attitude about things is...
Yeah, the old, is the glass half full or half empty, but gratitude that puts me in the pleasure zone when I think, oh yeah, well, I'm really happy about this, or, just to notice all of those little moments that are actually quite wonderful in the cacophony of dread that we get from, like, reading the newspapers and stuff like that.
It is. We feel a little helpless, but we can always affect what we do. Yes, we do.
Now, there are three more things on our you know, little simple things to do to for your health besides walking. One is to hydrate more. Mm-hmm. I guess you could drink more coffee now, for
Thank
one
you.
Thing.
Thank you.
The other virtue that I would like to always push for people is to read food labels.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, well, you know, that it's just it's just a simple awareness thing. You know, knowing what you're eating, because often eating is a habit, right? And to, like, especially the processed labels. If you read what's in something, you might be less inclined to just munch it down thoughtlessly and you realize, oh, this is what I'm eating? It's not just, you know, carrots and rainbows. It's a bunch of other unpronounceable things. So reading food labels is always enlightening and motivating.
It is. And I started doing that. But then I realized I did not know what these things were that I was reading, but I couldn't even pronounce them. So,
well, I call that the ick factor. It's like, oh, maybe I don't want to eat this.
Well, yeah, I kind of looked not so much at the food labels listed there, but how many there are. I mean, if it goes into 3 and 4 lines and turns into a paragraph, I just kind of give up and reach for something a little less complicated. We'll come back and talk more about some good things we can do for the new year. This is KHOI, and this is the Don Alana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Don Alana Kitchen. We're talking about resolutions. There's a lot of healthy things we can do for ourselves. You can't really make somebody else healthy, but you can make yourself healthy. So what are some good things we can do? We've been talking about things to avoid, but there's also good things you can do to your body. You can move around, you can drink more liquids, and find pleasures around you. And we've been talking about reading food labels. Ooh, that's a whole full-time job, I think. So if you're going to do that, take some responsibility and cook your own food.
Yes, that would be my main virtue that, well, actually, I have to say that this is probably one of the reasons why Lana and I do this show, to help people understand how to cook your own food, why to cook your own food, to appreciate cooking your own food, to find, you know, what's in season, what's good for you. It's, eating has become a very complex thing in our culture, and a lot of it is because it's a very big business, and there are a lot of corporations out there trying to tell you that really you don't want to cook. It's messy. It's no fun. It's terrible. Just buy this and, you know, and then blah, blah, blah. But really, that's not true. So cooking your own food is a big deal for Lana and I, and that's why we do this show, actually.
Right. We think about, oh, cooking, it's kind of low class and it takes time and you have to wash the dishes afterwards. The idea of food and actually some foods being low class, no kind of, oh, well, we don't eat that. We only eat steak here, or people can get real snobbish about, we only eat organic. You know, people can get pretty fussy about, that's because we have the advantage of living in a pretty darn rich country. A lot of people eating
too much food,
cooking your own food and eating. We're telling people to do that, and that's news to some people. Oh my goodness. Since we're thinking about the New Year's here, I have a few thoughts on black eyed peas. Black eyed peas is a New Year's thing. A New Year's thing. Often you have black-eyed peas for New Year's. It's supposed to bring luck, and it's kind of a new thing.
Southern, isn't it?
Yeah, it's southern. A southern thing. The black-eyed peas, which is not a pea at all, it is actually a bean in the cowpea family, made the journey to the Americas on slave ships from West Africa, and thought that we haven't really improved too much in our treating of people that come to our shores here, because the slaves were treated like, not like people, but like animals. They were allowed to eat black-eyed peas because that's what grew. They could grow it themselves, and that actually was fed to animals, too. So black-eyed peas was poor people's food and scoffed by a lot of people until the Civil War. Civil War, the Union troops attacked the many of the Confederate troops and ruined all their food supplies except for black-eyed peas, because even the Northern armies did not consider black-eyed peas edible. So that's kind of, all of a sudden they got to be kind of popular there, you know, as something you could eat. So a little shout out there to black-eyed peas from lowly beginnings, and they're not bad at all. I think they're fantastic. The most common way to eat black-eyed peas is Hoppin' John, which is kind of a nice casserole stuff that you can put anything in. So that's a New Year's dish, but you can eat them anytime.
You could eat black-eyed peas and millet, for example.
Ha!
A grain and a bean.
That would go good together. Mm-hmm. Yes, it would. Also, Donna says cook your own food. I say also grow a garden or get to know somebody who does. Getting to know a farmer is not a bad thing.
Well, and that goes along with my most famous adage, which is there's no such thing as too many vegetables. You don't have to worry about eating too much vegetables, or unless you're diabetic, fruit is also quite good for you. But anytime, there have been no studies that have ever shown that eating vegetables is bad for you.
Yeah, how about that? Let's do something that's good for us for a while. Growing a garden, even if you don't have a place to put one yourself, kind of expand your awareness and be aware of where the food comes from. Now you can get more and more food locally. There are a lot of younger farmers that, honest to God, want to farm. It's hard because it's hard to get land. It's hard to monetize everything now, but there are brave young souls that are actually growing food for us. So through local community supported agriculture and
farmers markets,
and even in local grocery stores, look for the local food stuff and get to know a farmer. I have a little aside here to a gardener. I love to garden. And I have a cousin in Wisconsin, Cousin Dave, and for his Christmas card, he sent out a little notice and a little picture of what he did on December 29th. He sent out a late Christmas card. Cousin Dave in Wisconsin was harvesting carrots on December 29th. Mm-hmm. And that was despite the same sort of gosh-awful winter weather that we've had. Long about before the first frost came, he put some chicken wire around his carrot bed and heaped it up with leaves. And yes, really, truly, it was diggable then. And he could, not that Cousin Dave is a little smug about these things or anything, but he was showing us, picked up the
fresh
nice
dug carrots in December in Wisconsin.
Yes, he fresh dug carrots. And you know that when they stay in the ground that long, and root vegetables will do this, they just get better and better.
They sweeten up, don't they?
They do. Yeah. So get to know your gardener.
But you got to figure that, you know, 100 years ago, people living in our northern climates, they ate something in the winter.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
I think so. So they're, and they didn't go to the supermarket to buy it. So keeping carrots in the ground heavily mulched is a technique for root cellaring, basically.
It is. It is. I have never kept carrots in the garden, but I have stored carrots in a bucket of sand in the basement, which is kind of the same thing. They start to get a little green on the top. Yes, the earth will feed us if we know how. And three cheers to all the gardeners out there. Let's see, what else are we going to know? Oh, remember, Donna says no such thing as too many vegetables.
Yes, right. No Very such good. Thing as too many vegetables.
Good. Oh, I want to mention that one of my things that I want to work on is being more flexible, being more adadaptable. I tend to be a little stuck in my ways somehow. I grew up in a German Lutheran household when I was young, and so having things a certain way was kind of a given. And you just kind of gritted your teeth and made sure you got your way. I have been trying, these many years, to kind of back off from some of that. And so when disasters happen, or minor disasters, I try not to lose it anymore. I try to be a little more adaptable. So my latest bit of adapting is right during cookie baking during Christmas, my oven died. You know, that's kind of major.
That's not a small disaster.
I was taking I actually baked most of my stuff. The last tray that I took out, opened the oven door, took the tray out, and the oven went kavoof. Not a big bang, but it was the sizable sort of thing that says, I'm dead now. I'm not doing anything more. And sure enough, the oven will not light for love nor money. The burners still work. So I use my oven a lot, but I have learned to adapt. I mean, we live in a rich country, and so I've learned to kind of use. I have a little convection oven, toaster oveny thing. So, yeah, it works. It works just fine. You learn new things, and it is not the end of the world. Like I said, we live in a very rich country. I just thought the timing was kind of interesting, right?
During Christmas.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Now, does that mean you're not going to be able to make any of your wonderful pie crust tarts?
No. Well, actually, I can make a little one. I found a recipe. I wanted to make some brownies just the other day, and most of the brownies called for, you know, 8.5 or 9 by 13 pan. That won't fit in there, but I found a recipe for brownies called Best Cocoa Brownies from Alice Medridge's, and they're so rich, good heavens, you make them in an 8 by 8 pan, which fit just fine in this little oven. See, one can adapt. I mean,
any Alice Medridge chocolate recipe is going to be glorious. She is one of the best writers for anything baked, actually.
Yeah, she's had this. Donna turned me on to this person, Alice Medridge, and whatever she does with chocolate, well, with anything, but if you run across a recipe of hers, go with it.
Trust it.
I think it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, she's from Berkeley, I think, and started a very well-known chocolate shop there. I think it's called Chocolat or something like that. Well, she's quite the thing.
Chocolate. Well, I want to end with one more quick poem, looking ahead to warmer things, called The January Thaw by Ted Kooser. A flock of several hundred small brown birds, all of one mind, crazily chases its tail across the muddy field and into a grove of trees. They're full of joy, like a wheel that breaks loose from a truck and bounds down the road ahead of the driver, and eventually slows and falls behind, wobbling onto a spot on the shoulder, rocking around on the rim, and then settling with a ringing cry. Let's look forward to the January thaw. Yeah. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon. We repeat it again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening. We had music by the Barn Owl Band. My name is Lana Noctigal.
I'm Donna Briskintas.
We had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.